Hey folks, Jared Sylvester here. Thank you so much for checking out this podcast from Repurposed.
None of us like to kind of go through, I call it the wandering, you know, where you, it's like you're wandering through the woods and you don't know where you're going. Nobody likes that feeling. It's not comfortable. It's necessary to get to the other side of whatever that is.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Repurpose, a show dedicated to inspire you to live a life of purpose, intentionality, and of impact. I'm your host, Jared Sylvester of Teachus Financial Group, a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach and inspire true wealth. If you want more information on our firm, go to our website, teachusfinancial.com. Well, on this episode of Repurposed, I'm bringing you a conversation I had with Matt Burke. Matt is a 15-year veteran of the National Football League. He played most of his career with the Minnesota Vikings, but he ended his playing days with the Baltimore Ravens, where he won a Super Bowl in 2013, and shortly thereafter, he retired. So as a Minnesota native myself, I was excited to have him on the show, but I wanted to ask him more specifically about his life post-football. You know, did he have a plan when he was approaching retirement? Where does he draw his purpose from now? And was it hard dealing with his newfound identity outside of football after a high-profile job and career? The answer he gives in this show will help you and I live with more purpose and impact in our own lives. Here's my conversation with Matt Burke. All right, I've got Matt Burke on the line. Matt, thank you so much for joining me on the show here today.
My pleasure, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm a huge fan. You know, growing up in Minnesota, I mean, it's kind of by default, you have to be a Vikings fan. it's just a cool honor to be able to speak with you here today. We're going to talk about your NFL career and how you got into that. But tell folks what you're up to nowadays.
Well, I moved back to the Twin Cities about 2 years ago. My wife and blessed enough to have 8 children. So life is pretty full around the house.
How old are your kids, by the way?
We range from 16 to 2.
Oh, wow. You got a nice little spread there.
Yeah. People say, what ages are your kids? I said, you name an age. I probably
I got one or two.
Yeah. But yeah, so do that. Obviously that's the best thing going, big family. And then I have a speaking company business, Matt Burke and Company, that, get out there, go around the cities and around the state and talk to different folks, do a lot of corporate speaking, churches, youth groups, things like that. And the last big project I think I'm working on at the present time is I'm actually starting a Catholic high school that's going to open in the fall of 2019 in the Burnsville, Eagan area. So very excited about that.
Yeah, a lot going on. What's your main message when you go and do speaking?
I think that, a lot of times we look at people who are, let's just call it successful, and we think, well, they're just more talented than everybody else. And I mean, I can tell you I just draw from my experiences, whether it's with football or business or, all the great people that I've been around, I say great at their jobs. They were just maniacal about mastering the fundamentals. And so it's about just figuring out what those fundamentals are and doing them day after day after day. And I think what separates a lot of times successful people from people that aren't as successful as they want to be is they're just willing to grind and just do that boring, lonely work of mastering those fundamentals every day. It's not glorious, but that's what quote wins in football and in life.
Did you have that grit at a young age? How did that develop and then turn into being an NFL player?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. And I mean, grit is kind of a popular topic right now. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, as a kid, I just kind of always been that grinder. I mean, I just knew as a kid, I loved sports. I wasn't any good at them, but I wanted to play. So I just knew that, I always enjoyed the process, you know. I'd go out in the alley and shoot baskets till the sun went down. And even though I wasn't very good, it didn't matter. You know, I really always enjoyed the process. And so, yeah, certainly when you have kids, you know, you try to kind of figure out in this instant gratification world we live in, how do you instill that grit, that work ethic, that ability to delay gratification? I mean, I guess I've always been like that. I think maybe that's why football suited me well, is because that's kind of what you need for football. You work and practice all year, but you only have, well, in high school, you only have 10 games. So it's all about being able to grind. And, I don't have a great answer for that, but I guess what I tell people is, if you're trying to figure out what you want to do or what you want to be, what do you love doing on a daily basis? You know, don't think about the result. So I want to be a doctor. Well, you know, do you like reading books? Do you like reading medical journals? Because that's what you're going to be doing if you have to do that. Whatever you like doing on a daily basis, you know, figure out what that love and doing that every single day, figure out where that gets you and do that. Because, I think to be great at anything, you have to love the process.
Yeah. You said that you love to shoot baskets, love sports. When did you know that football was going to be your shtick?
It's a great question because I didn't play football growing up. I didn't play until the 10th grade, and I just did it because I was switching high schools, and some of my buddies were already at that high school, and they played football, and they said, you know, you should play football because it's a great way to meet guys before classes start. So I was just going to play 1 year just kind of for fun. I did fashion myself a basketball player, played and was, you know, was kind of like not bad at it. Figured out that I did have a talent for getting in people's way and grabbing onto them, not holding onto them. There's a difference for an O-lineman.
Also useful in parenting, by the way.
Yes, exactly.
It's just
exactly.
Like, yes.
But no, you know, played varsity in high school, never thought I'd play in college. And I wasn't very heavily recruited, but my coach said, well, one of the schools that's recruiting is, you know, Harvard University. And I had pretty good grades, but I didn't have grades good enough to get into Harvard just on grades alone, and liked playing football. So played in college and obviously didn't go to Harvard thinking that it would lead to the NFL. But, again, I do think it speaks to loving the process. You know, I loved lifting weights and I love food. So
it's a good combination,
good combo to have to be an old lineman. And I mean, lo and behold, I'm graduating college and I'm 300 pounds and, you know, I can move a little bit. And gosh, the bike, I still remember when Denny Green called me and was like, hey, you want to play for the Vikings? And I said, well, I'll play for anybody, but yeah, I prefer to play for the Vikings. And drafted me. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, you just kind of, you know, you just do it every day. You just try to get a little bit better and do the best you can. And, you know, even when you're in the NFL, everyone thinks, well, you're in the NFL. I mean, every day you're fighting to keep your job. And so you just kind of, I never had that long-term goal. I think I just always had, I just never thought it was a possibility. And so I was just kind of going to practice every day, just trying to get better. And, you know, next thing I know, I woke up and I played 15 years in the NFL. And it was like, wow, that was, I mean, even when I look back now, it's still hard to believe.
Yeah. I mean, you won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. I mean, I'm sure you get asked this question, but what was the peak of that, you know, 15 year career?
You know, there's a lot of them. I mean, certainly, you know, to win the Super Bowl, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. That was the last game I played in. It was kind of like my rookie year was 1998. And when I say that to Vikings fans, we all kind of hang our heads a little bit, you know,
because
it's only been 20 years, Jared. I'm sure we'll get better. You know, to kind of start my career off like that. And it was really a lot of play. It was fortunate to play on a lot of good teams and get really close a lot of times and never made it. And then to finally get over the hump in year 15, it's like, yeah, that's a storybook ending that, you know, should happen to, like, you know, really good players, not necessarily me, but I'll take it. And being able to share it. The biggest thing is share that moment with my family and some close friends. You know, you're down on the field, confetti's falling, you're like passing around the Lombardi trophy. It's like, you know, this isn't even real,
right?
You know, certainly feel very, very blessed to have been able to experience that. You know, the only thing I say, you know, not that it matters, and but if I could change one thing about my career, it would be that I'd have been holding the Lombardi trophy in a Vikings uniform. But someday that'll happen in my lifetime, and yeah, it'll be a great party.
I was going to say, in your lifetime, if we could just have that, we'll be good to go. I think we'll, as Vikings fans, we'll take anything at this point, probably.
Yeah.
How did you know it was time? I mean, you kind of had the storybook ending. I mean, it was your mentality, like, I'm going to retire here in a couple of years. How did you just know it was time? Was it just the fact that it came to this, you know, just Cinderella-type climax, and you knew that that was the time? How did you know?
I didn't know. I mean, when you're going through it, especially when you're an older player, like, you're halfway through the season and you're like, oh my gosh, I could never go through this again. You know, cause it's hard. I mean, I'm not complaining cause, you know, it's a heck of a way to make a living, but it's hard. You're like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And then what happens is the season's over and you wait a couple months and you start to feel pretty good. And then you're like, yeah, I can do it one more year. And you really do just have kind of that one more year mentality. And I mean, shoot, I can remember having a conversation with my brother one time. It was after like my eighth year. I said, I got to play one more year and I'm done. I can't do this anymore. But, that year we won the Super Bowl and I really did want to come back and play one more year because I thought that the challenge of, you know, winning the Super Bowl's almost impossible. Defending it is like never happens anymore. And I loved some of my teammates with the Ravens. I loved our coach, John Harbaugh, and really was trying to find, you know, kind of like the, just trying to find the, I don't know what it is, the feeling to say, yes, I'm coming back. But it was a couple months after the season. And I said, you know what? I really felt like, you know, God, you've been so, so good to me. And at the time, we had six kids at home, and I said, you know what, it's time to come home, because football is, again, it's a great, I think playing offensive line is the greatest job in the world, but it's more than a job. You know, it's a lifestyle, and it consumes you, particularly during the season. Yeah. And I thought, you know what, I mean, why go back and screw any of this up? You know, I could get hurt, we got a bad year, whatever. And I think I just thought it'd be just kind of selfish for me. So, decided to retire, and, looking back, I think it was the right call.
At that point, did you have a plan? Did you know, you know, what, and even more importantly, who you were going to be post NFL?
No, zero plan, which is like, I guess what they probably tell you, the wrong way to do things. And you hear about pro athletes and struggling when they're done playing because they do lose that identity. And you should always prepare for life after football. I said, you know what? This is kind of me just in a nutshell. I do walk by faith, not by sight. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to pour everything. This is what an opportunity. I'm going to pour everything I have into football as long as I can play. And don't get me wrong. At the beginning of my career, I was hoping to play 1 year in the NFL, because I was getting, you know, I was getting my butt kicked every day in practice by John Randall and all these other guys. Like, I'm not going to last here. You know, these guys are too good. And so I just poured everything I had, because I wanted to say when I walked away from football that I'd given it every ounce that I had. And then, you know, I'd figure out what's next. And so I guess for me, you know, I really thought like, well, it won't be a problem for me. You know, I've got a family and I've got an education and I'll have options. But it is different because I don't know. I mean, certainly my world changed when I retired. I mean, my focus changed. But it's you don't realize how many people there are in your life that treat you a certain way because of what you are, not who you are. And so that was a little bit, you know, certainly disappointing in some cases for me. I thought, wow, you know, or the way I tell it is, you know, back when I played football, when I told jokes, a lot more people laughed at them, and they laughed louder than they do now.
Wow.
You know, it's good because then you figure out really who's, you know, who loves you for who you are and not what you are. And I was always pretty, I had bought in early on in my career that being a football player was what I wanted to be and was who I should be. And, you know, I find out pretty quick when I had experienced in relative terms to me, I mean, more worldly success than I could have ever hoped for.
Right.
And yet I still wasn't very happy. I wouldn't say that I didn't have a lot of joy in my heart. And that's when God really started to do some amazing things in my life. My wife entered my life, and I was close with a couple of teammates who were devout Christians, and it really kind of put me. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and I always knew that God made me, and that I knew what God did for me, and I knew what He expected of me. But I fell away from that in college and early on in my career. So it was about year four or five in the NFL. I mean, I came back and. You know, recommitted to my faith, or I'll say, you know, claimed it as my own. You know, when I was a kid, my parents gave me the gift of faith, but at a certain point, we all have to claim it as our own. And
right. And
so my identity's always been rooted in, not always, but since then, being rooted in being a child of God and, you know, Christian, husband, father. I mean, those are the things. And I look back 6 years ago, I retired from football, and, sometimes I look at, well, certainly I look at pictures, and I mean, I'm, you know, about 100 pounds lighter. So I look at how I was one fat, ugly dude.
Oh, come on now.
No, I was. No, you're not going to make me feel any better. You can't convince me otherwise. But, you know, I sometimes look back and it almost seems like it never happened, or that was like another world ago. It's crazy, but that's,
yeah.
But it's all good. You know, it's all, some people, I guess you look back and, well, I wish I was still doing that. I mean, I'm really grateful that have that opportunity, and hopefully when I played, I used that platform for a little bit more than just myself, and I try to keep doing that today.
Yeah, I connect with your story so much. I clearly don't have the success that you had, you know, from a high profile stance and person. But when I left my television career, I have literally said the exact same things you said, where I people started to treat me a little differently, and it hurt me, and I really had to figure out who I was, and my identity really took a beating. Those first couple of years, it took me 2 years. If I just would be honest and vulnerable here on the show, it took me 2 years to finally come to grips with my identity outside of television. You've been out of football now for 6 years. How long did it take you?
I would say the first year was hard. So the first year I was like, well, I'm just gonna run as fast as I can to the next thing. And I wrote a book and I took a job, and you know what? I should have just sat back and just relaxed, right? I should have just thought and read and you're right. I would say it took me about the first year was really hard. Towards the end of the second year, it got better. But this is what I tell people, Jared. I don't know. I mean, because I'm sure people, knowing that you've been through it, they ask you, and certainly players ask me. I say, look, none of us like to kind of go through. I call it the wandering. You know, it's like you're wandering through the woods and you don't know where you're going. Nobody likes that feeling, but you're going to go through that when you're done, no matter what. I don't care if you've got the best, you know, greatest, most well thought out plan in the world. Life is different. It feels different. People treat you. You don't know all the ways it's going to be different. So while the wandering is not, it's not comfortable, it's necessary to get to the other side of whatever that is. So especially for, you're in TV or you play sports, you know, if you're an achiever, you're used to kind of feeling like you have this illusion, at least, that like you're in control and you can grind your way through anything and figure it out and get it done. And you know, this is something, it's not like you can just will your way through it. I think it's just part of the transition. And don't be afraid to say, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure it out. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help, especially for men. We're so stupid, right? We're men, we're going to do it. You're just making it a lot harder than it needs to be.
Well, I think we give ourselves unreal expectations that we're going to pick up right where we left off as soon as it's done. And I've had a chance to kind of coach people through a process, whether they're leaving a job or retiring, because I can speak with some experience in this realm. But I say two things. I say, you're going to have the, oh crap, what did I do moment at some point, to some extent. You know what I mean? And then also too, you've got to give yourself tons of time. I was just chatting with some folks at a small group a couple of days ago, and one of the gals in the group was going through a transition, and she's 2 years into it. She's still trying to find her way. And I said, give yourself tons of time. If you look back and it took you 2 years just to kind of figure it out what your next move was, so be it. Why are we putting these irrelevant time constraints on, you know, this next phase? Sometimes we have to go through it, just like what you said. You got to kind of walk around and wander a little bit. Maybe that's even part of the process, even if you have a plan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was talking to a woman for 9 years. She's been trying to figure out what's next. Super successful, and for 9 years, and she goes, I'm just trying to figure out what the hell is wrong with me. Mm. I said, stop trying to figure it out. There's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
This is just the path you're on. Like, stop trying to force everything and thinking you got to be this certain person or make this much money or achieve this certain level. Just be where today, just be there and just be on your path. And, you're right. The same things that make us really successful and really great at some things, right? Your greatest strength can also be your greatest weakness or your greatest detriment.
Yeah, that's really well put. I love how you put that. Talk about just purpose, you know, not to sound hyper spiritual here, and you don't have to go that route, but you know, what ultimately are you trying to do? Was football your purpose? How do you kind of articulate that question?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely hope not. You know, I mean, to put it in the most basic terms, and I'm a football player, so I like to keep it simple. You know, I say to know, love, and serve God. And, you know, I think that always goes back to the service part, right? I mean, like I said, I mean, I grew up, you know, had just about everything I needed, really nothing that I wanted. So, I mean, I know what it's like. I was real fortunate to grow up that way, and then certainly been blessed abundantly with some status and fame and money playing football. So yeah, we try to, you know, figure out how can we help other people? How can we impact other people? And whether that's through, you know, doing like corporate works of mercy, like food, shelter, clothes, or like the school project that we're working on. Just trying to give, you know, I mean, I believe that, yourself is such a, it's such a small thing to serve. And, you know, most people I've kind of learned this. I mean, I've really started to not just learn it, but I mean, believe it, see it with kids and my kids and social media. And, I mean, the quickest way to a miserable life is to focus on yourself. And I guess, you know, people ask me all the time, well, you could, right? You're retired. You could be playing golf every day and you can be fishing every day. And I mean, I've certainly done that, and I know people who do that. And those people, to me, really, they lack a purpose. They seem kind of miserable. You know, like there's a hole in all of us that doesn't matter how much money or stuff or golf or fishing or whatever your thing is, you'll never be able to fill it. And you know, I'm not saying I haven't tried at certain times in my life, but I mean, the biggest thing for us is my wife and I, we obviously love kids. And so around our kids a lot and a bunch of other kids. And I just think that, right now in this culture, it's hard being a kid for a lot of reasons. And so we're just, I think, you know, trying to do our little part here where we live and in our community, trying to be a beacon, trying to be a light and you know, just helping out those people. I mean, we can all get overwhelmed at times with all the problems of the world and think we got to do this and we got to do this, And I'm kind of a big of, you know, just do what you can where you are with what you have.
Yeah.
And we can, all of us, regardless of status or finances or anything, you know, we can help somebody. We can do something for somebody else. And I think that's what we are all called to do is think about others, you know, realize that other people matter, put other people first. And it's kind of amazing how you, if you really adapt that mindset, kind of what takes place in your heart and in your life.
Yeah. And I think it takes the pressure off. And again, I just had conversations this week with people about this. If you put your identity and your view of success in the world's eyes, you will constantly be trying. There'll never be enough. Even you winning, you know, a Super Bowl title, like it's always going to be more. When you put your purpose in something foundational and not of yourself, it takes all the pressure off. I don't have to hold a standard of the world on me for me to find value. You know, it's kind of like for me, I'm a person of faith too. My life has been won. I win. If I die today or I die in 50 years, I won no matter what, regardless of how much money I have, how much status I have. And that actually motivates me more to want to go serve more. It's almost kind of counterintuitive if you think of it. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's well said. You're right. It's just so freeing, right? It's so free. You don't have to be anything to anybody. And one of my favorite lines is most men spend money they don't have on things they don't need, trying to impress people they don't know.
Right.
And that's just, I think, perpetuated to like a hyper level with social media, right? Yeah. We're all trying to show how awesome our lives are.
Right.
And it's that I'm the one I tried social media to be like, hey, you know, like I screwed this up or I screwed that up. But that's just real. Right. And I think that if you do, like you said, if your identity is found in Jesus, you have that confidence to try not to have to live up to anybody else's standards. Like you said, I love the way you phrase it. You've already won.
Right.
You've already won. You don't have to be anything to anybody else.
Yeah, that's awesome. We've got about 30 seconds left. Matt, if you don't mind, where can people find you?
MattBurkeandCompany.com is our website. And as much as I trash social media, I am on Twitter, at Burke Matt. So, you know, I'm always, everybody hits me up on LinkedIn or whatever. I always try to respond. I'm a big believer in collaboration, and, you know, we can all do so much more if we work together.
Yeah, man. Well said. Matt, I appreciate it so much. Keep up the great work. God bless you.
Jared, you do the same. Thank you. God bless you too.
Well, I sure hope you enjoyed this conversation with Matt Berg. My favorite thing that he said was this: if you want to have a miserable life, spend it focused on yourself. Isn't that quite a statement? The greatest way that we can have impact in our lives is to focus on a cause and a purpose greater than ourselves. And coincidentally, it's also the best and easiest way to have a fulfilled life. We are called as Christians to find our purpose in something other than ourselves. Remember, it's not about us, but when we do that, we have the greatest fulfillment and impact. What a great coincidence that is. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Repurpose. Just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Bentages called Repurpose, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. If you want the first two chapters of that book totally free, just go to our website, tagesfinancial.com, and click on Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening here today. Also, as usual, big thanks to Faith Radio for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed. Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Repurposed. Just a reminder, these podcasts are only available because of generous support of people just like you. If you'd like to make a gift and support Faith Radio, go to the website, myfaithradio.com. Also, another way you can help is by sharing these podcasts on social media and subscribing. Just click subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, and you'll be sure to never miss a show.